I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome to Hometown Glory, your Spurs and Culture podcast. And yes, you're right, I am not Charlie, but a pale imitation called Tom. Unfortunately, Charlie can't make it, but on with me are Rosa, Ashley and Billy. There's weirdly not much actual football to talk about after this winter break. I managed to get COVID during it, so I had no football to watch and had to actually talk to my family, which was terrible. Of course, I still had Twitter and I used it to follow a million Spurs transfer rumours, some of which actually came true. Later, we'll talk Brighton, the women's team, Delhi, and have our culture picks. But first, let's get straight into those transfers. Why don't we talk Inns first and those two lads from Juve? Billy, what do you think of our new signings?
Yeah, do you know what? I think they're quite smart signings. I don't pretend to know that much about them from what I've been reading and watching a couple of videos. They do seem like they think they're going to improve us. I think the Swedish guy, Kulusevski, I just got this weird feeling that he's going to be like quite a big hit with us. He seems like he's got that sort of air of like a cult hero. Just from the way that he talks, and I've seen a couple of his old social media posts and stuff. He seems like someone that the fans are going to warm to pretty quickly. And he's a young player. He won Serie A Young Player of the Year a couple of years ago at Parma. I think he had an incredible season at Parma. Juventus signed him, and he had a decent breakthrough season. Got quite a few assists for Ronaldo. If you watch some of the videos of last season, there's plenty of times when he's assisted Ronaldo. So yeah, I think it's an exciting sign, and I think Bentancur, the midfielder, I don't know that much about, but from what I gather, he seems like a player that Conte is going to like. He seems to be a hard worker. I think the biggest positive for me on both of them put together is they're obviously players that Conte will know from his time at Inter. There's rumours that Conte wanted Kulusevski when he was at Inter, so I think that's really, really exciting. So yeah, I think they're two smart buys. Problem for me would be that we don't seem to address the weak points in our squad, like the right wing back. And we still are a Harry Kane injury from away from our season being pretty much over, but still don't have that second striker. But, you know, I'm happy with those two signings. Yeah, happy of them.
Yeah, we seem fairly well stocked at centre mid, even with the players that have gone. But yeah, and the right back or right wing back, we didn't really solve that one. So we'll have more of Doherty and Royal. Ash, have you watched any highlights videos of our new signings?
I was convinced that Ndombele and Lo Celso were going to be amazing. So, yeah, my opinion counts for very little when it comes to new signings. But I'm just excited to have new midfielders. I think the past few years, the midfield sort of like been the area that's like let us down quite a lot. And like I think Billy summarised it really well. I think if these are players that Conte wanted, then I'm over the moon, because I think that's been our big concern over the past few weeks. Like every kind of moan that he's had, we've been really worried. So as long as he's happy, I'm happy.
I think another thing, it was kind of a weird context of the transfer window, because I think if we'd have made these two signings at early doors, I think they'd have been quite well received from the fans. But I think because of the weird stuff that happened before, like the month of tracing Traore when he turned us down for Barcelona, and then the Diaz thing, which he again made us look pretty embarrassing when he chose Liverpool over us, I think it's kind of bittered the taste a little bit of these two signings. But I think in the context of just those two signings, they're decent signings. But I think in the window as a whole, I think they've got quite a bit of work to do to convince the fans, but hopefully they can do it. But it was just it was kind of a weird transfer window. We wasted a lot of time on Traore, and then the Diaz thing happened. But you know, these two players are coming in, so let's hope they do well.
Billy, going back to Kulu, where do you think he fits with Son, Lucas and Kane?
I've seen a couple of things that he sounds like he's going to be sort of, he can play, I think one of the encouraging things, he can play anywhere in the front three, I've read. I think I'm right in saying that he sometimes plays as a striker for Sweden as well. So maybe even we might even see him filling for Harry Kane at times. I've literally just watched a video on Twitter just before this where someone was saying he might even slot into midfield because he's good at carrying the ball. But to be honest, I think with Bergwijn, Moura and Kulusevski, we've now got some decent options. Because, you know, Son and Kane, their positions are locked in. You know, we're never going to rotate them, really. But now with those three behind around them, that's quite a good set of options. And I do think it's probably going to end up better than what we saw from Brian Hill, who I know we'll talk about in a minute. But he was sort of coming on in games and he didn't really have the biggest impact. So I think if we stick with the same team and Kulusevski comes off the bench, I think he's going to offer us a bit more than what Brian Hill did.
We're back to my bugbear, which is wingers, we're told, can play as strikers. Rosa.
This is it. This is my one worry. I was like, oh God, have we signed another player? And Tom's just going to lose his shit over because it's just like, it's like, is he? I was discussing him with Ollie earlier and I was like, but like, what is he? Is he someone that they're going to pretend is a striker? And Ollie was like, I don't know, maybe. But I actually feel fine about the whole transfer window. And I don't even mind that much about the two transfers that weren't. I think the Traore one seems bad in the context of it taking the whole month and not happening. But if Barcelona, even the Barcelona mess that they are now, if they come in for you, you're going to say yes, especially if that's where you grew up, right? And Diaz, at least that was only 24 hours. And like, again, if Liverpool come in for you, that's where you're going to go. We're just like, I don't mind if people get upset about it. But at the same time, I think there has to be a recognition of where we are in the pecking order. That's just reality. All I know about these two players, I just messaged my Juve friend Paolo. And I said, is Bentancur rubbish? Because Juve Twitter seems quite happy. And he said to me, we're so happy we sold him and Kulusevski too. But he did say the problem with Bentancur was that he seemed a good player, but he didn't grow. He didn't progress in 2 to 3 seasons. And Kulusevski also may become very strong. And Paolo's big thing was that if you get players that Conte wants, he will do it. Like, no worries. He signed off for me. He said, as we say in Italy, he can squeeze blood from stones. And I was like, that's quite good because we've got quite a lot of stones still at Tottenham. But so I feel quite positive about it, really.
The thing is as well, I guess we also need some players in who are Conte's men and were signed by him and will just, yeah, put everything on the line for him. You mentioned Liverpool there as well. I was just going to say, transfer window wise, it was great to see that West Ham and Arsenal have both had a nightmare, seemingly, and definitely haven't strengthened. Ash, anything to add on our transfers?
Yeah, I mean, like, just on the point about West Ham and Arsenal, I put in our little text group like on the day that I thought like last week and like the past few days has been like really important in top four race. And I think Arsenal not strengthening and probably like weakening their squad, actually. West Ham sort of failing bizarrely to get Calvin Phillips. I don't know who West Ham think they are, but failing to get those players is like a big deal. And I think like, yeah, it puts us sort of in prime position for fourth now, like I'm battling for United. So I'm just hopeful. I'm always hopeful with these transfers. And I sort of like threw a wobbly about not getting like Traore and Diaz, but like I've calmed down now, and I think we're going to be all right.
And I think another thing for us as well is I was gutted about Diaz, because it seemed like a big name player and the sort of thing that a big club like Liverpool would do, and maybe something that we might do. But I think looking back on it, the reality is that he plays in the same position as Son anyway. So you would maybe question, is he really that needed for us? If we're going to spend that much money, then I'm sure it can be better spent elsewhere. But I just think our history as a club, as a whole, the big signings like that, they just don't work for us. And like our best signings of recent years, like if you look at like Son and Moura and people like that, they're the same kind of level of signings that we've just made. So hopefully, I think we're more suited to this kind of signing where they don't come in with like the weight of the world on their shoulders. As I'm sure we're going to talk about next, our two huge record signings in Gio and Tanguy have totally flopped for us. So maybe it's this kind of signing that's actually going to turn out pretty well for us. So I'm feeling pretty positive now. There was when I woke up and saw those, I think it was early in the morning, those Liverpool rumours started coming through that they're going to hijack Diaz, I was gutted. But I think looking back overall, it's been, you know, I think it will turn out pretty good for us.
Yeah, and I'm excited that Kulusevski is only 21 as well. So there's clearly a lot of room for him to grow and to grow under Conte, a kind of world-class coach. Okay, shall we move on to outgoings? Billy just touched on it there, £100 million worth of outgoings. Plus a couple more. We're going to talk about Dele in a minute. First, though, let's talk about Ndombele, Lo Celso and Ringo himself, Brian Hill. They're all away on loan, at least initially. Ash, how do you feel about the three that have left? Excluding Dele, we'll talk about him in a sec.
I hope Ndombele and Lo Celso we never see again. My only sort of concern is that we've sort of just like kicked the can down the road and that we're going to have to just deal with the problem in the summer, because Leon, the price for Ndombele is like something ridiculous, like 65 million euros. And I think like Leon just don't spend that kind of money on players. So he'll probably just be like turning up at like Hotspur Way in 4 months and we have to just deal with the issue again. So that worries me. But Lo Celso, I just don't care about Lo Celso at all. I won't miss him. Like, I think those players also have like barely contributed anything under Conte. So I know that like we've lost like, what is it, those four players, but they've barely played. So I don't think we're going to like miss them as much as some people are making out.
Yeah, there was a highlights reel doing the rounds on Twitter today of Lo Celso's goals over the Premier League goals over the last 3 years. And yeah, there was one, right, versus Man City.
Yeah, exactly.
Rosa, you talked about Lo Celso in depth in the last episode. Do you have anything to add? Are you over the moon that he's gone?
Yeah, I'm absolutely delighted. I was just like, good luck and good riddance, quite frankly. I mean, yeah, they've just been, like I said last week, they were just all, particularly Lo Celso, but also Ndombele, just wasted everybody's time. And I think it's all very well to sort of say, oh, we've got rid of like four players, but the way they've all been playing or not playing, like they barely add up to like one full player. So it'd matter. They're just taking up space that somebody else can use. I'd like to see Brian back at some point. That'd be fun. And to be honest, I'm not even like, I'm absolutely fine with sort of procrastinating on the whole issue with Ndombele and Lo Celso. So if they come back in the summer, I mean, they're never coming back to us, are they? Like whatever happens, they will be sold at some point. Like neither of them are ever going to play for Spurs again. She says confidently, you never know with football. But I'm just delighted that I just won't have to look at either of them again for at least another, 6 months?
Yeah, I think we all agree on Brian Hill, that we really hope he'll come back. Billy, do you ever want to see Tanguy and Lo Celso back in N17?
No, I don't. I don't want to see them ever again. And that's a shame, because when they signed, I thought, you know, this is different for us. These are two big signings. I thought they're going to work out, but it's just not going to happen. And I totally trust Conte's judgment if he wants to get rid of these players. I think that for me is another thing about the window. I think one form of backing Conte is not just signing the players that he wants, but it's getting rid of these players that he doesn't want at all costs. Because in the past, you probably would imagine, certainly in the case for Dele, which we'll talk about in a minute, a lot of these sort of deals that we've got aren't the best deals for us financially, but we've got rid of the players and we've got them out the door, and that's all that matters. So I think a good form of backing Conte is just getting rid of these guys at any cost, you know, offering them around for maybe cheap prices, getting them out. And we have done that. And I think it's going to be really, really important moving forward that we get rid of these guys. I do find it quite funny, this clause that's in the Ndombele thing. It's like the most pointless clause ever. I can imagine sort of Leon wondering, just sort of agreeing to any non-mandatory obligation clause, because what does that even mean? So they don't have to pay it. They could, you could put any number on there. It's just so, like, so pointless. I don't think Leon are going to buy him, certainly not for that price, but maybe if he has a good season there, they might sort of half it maybe. We're definitely not going to get 65 million from Leon from him. But glad to see the back of them, to be honest. It's a shame it didn't work out, but they had to go.
Yeah, just I think you made a really good point about backing Conte by getting rid of these players. And I think one thing that was so impressive about that sort of first Pochettino era was that he just culled the Kabuls and the Adebayors. And I think like the squad harmony is going to be like really important, especially for this last, what is it, 18 games in the league. So I'm really excited to just see like how he brings everyone together. And like he's obviously got rid of like the two wasters in the squad. So that just bodes really well for the future, I think. And also just shows the players that are there that he's just not going to accept anyone dicking around, which is really good. Really good.
Yeah, it's a lot of bad vibes gone, isn't it, from the dressing room, Rosa?
Yeah, and I think even if it's not bad vibes, and even if it, you know, breaks my heart in a tiny way to say it, this sort of feels like with those two sold who are like, the big, big buys, like towards the end of the Poch era, and Dele, who was at the very least kind of quite badly mismanaged, I think, even, you know, even by Poch. This sort of, this is the end. This is the last of the Pochettino era, isn't it? Like, whatever that means for us, if it makes some of us, Ash, feel relieved, if it makes some of us feel a bit sad, whatever, it sort of had to be done, didn't it? And I think that's because I was saying to you guys earlier, the sort of combination of those three players, like the waste of money on Ndombele and Lo Celso and the sort of Dele burnout are like, they're almost like the only things where I actually sort of feel slightly angry at Poch, which isn't like an emotion that I kind of associate with him. But I think those three players are sort of emblematic of like the mistakes, the biggest mistakes that were made under him and were sort of allowed to kind of, I don't know, just sort of fester for the last 3 years, really. And so we really needed to make a clean break for kind of for everyone's benefit, really.
And they've all had so many chances, right? And Ndombele, Lo Celso and Dele under five different managers now, sadly. And yeah, £100 million. Brian, though, I hope he's just a bit homesick and he'll go and have a great 6 months.
I think the thing with Brian is, I think it's a bit of a shame that he didn't go to another Premier League club. But I just don't think there was any interest there. I would have liked to, if you think about his progression as a player, I don't think we're going to learn much about him from being back in the Liga. I think it's a shame that we couldn't sort of loan to another Premier League club, but hopefully get some football under his belt, come back. I don't see him in the same way as some of the players that have left us recently. I do think he does have a future at us. So I'd like, hopefully his confidence will come back and we will see him again, because he's not one that I want to cast off right now. He's one that I want to see come back.
And seemingly we paid quite a few quid for him as well. Lamella plus a lump of cash. Anyway, let's cheer ourselves up or have a bit of a cry. We've talked about those waste men. Apart from Brian, you can come back. Let's talk about a Spurs legend, or is the L word controversial? I know Charlie had a brief Twitter spat with someone about the word legend in relation to Dele Alli. He was such a key part of that golden Poch team, part of the amazing desk front four, and at times just like totally unplayable. Now he's at Everton with Frank and a fair few other misfits. I want to start with Billy because I was so excited when I found this out today. Billy, I believe you invented the Dele Alli chant, right?
Yeah, it was kind of a weird sequence of events. I think after that Palace goal that he scored, I think I just at the time, it was one of those songs. It's like the least original song ever, but I think Arsenal and West Ham were singing it a lot about Player and Ozil. And after that goal, I just tweeted it like a Dele Alli version, and it just seemed to pick up a bit of traction. And then I think like the next away game, it got started to be sung, and then it's sort of one of those things that sort of stuck with us. But it's not the most original song that's ever been made, and we did sort of steal it from West Ham and Arsenal, which is not a good look. But it's one of those songs that you sort of associate with the old grounds. It's one of those songs that is one of the most popular songs we've had as a fan base. And I think that speaks a lot about Dele Alli and his sort of connection with the fans. And I've been really upset today, to be honest, and yesterday. For some reason, I can't really quite put my finger on it. I've been thinking about it a lot today. It's one of the players leaving that has hit me the most in my lifetime. When better players have left us, you know, we've lost Bale, we've lost Modric, we've lost Van der Vaart, we've lost all those kind of players. But this one just really hits hard. And I think part of the reason might be is because it wasn't quite the ending that we had hoped for. Because when he burst on the scene, I just got some stats here, actually. When he burst onto the scene, there was nothing like it for me as a fan. It's one of the things that I will always look back on. And a lot of people talk about trophies and things like that, but some of the moments that Dele Alli gave to me and gave to us as a fans, you know, mean so much to me. And while it was really annoying that he didn't win a trophy with us, it's just like, I'll never forget some of those times that he'd given us, which I know we're going to talk about in a bit. But in his first 63 Premier League games, Dele Alli scored 26 goals and got 14 assists. Lampard and Gerrard in the same time got 6 goals and 4 assists, and Rooney got 15 and 7, and Scholes got 18 and 3. So no player in Premier League, no young English player in Premier League history has ever touched those numbers, and I don't think anyone will either, because if you compare it to the breakthrough England players now, like your Grealish, Madison, Foden, etc., none of them have ever got close to those kind of numbers that Dele Alli put up. And I think part of the reason why it's sort of been such a malaise over the last 3 years is kind of the reason why it is so sad over the next couple of days, or the last couple of days, sorry, because it didn't quite have the ending we all wanted it to, but the times it has given us are something I will never ever forget.
Oh, Billy. Rosa, come on, continue the emotion.
Yeah, I feel really, really gutted. Like, there's another set, isn't there? Like, it wasn't he the first, he got to 50 goals, like, quicker as well than, like, Gerrard or Lampard or any of them, really. And like watching his farewell video, like I joke about like crying and choking up, but like I properly did cry watching that. It made me feel so sad. And then, yeah, and also in a way that I can't quite, like part of it, I think, is just in that just sort of really sentimental way of kind of looking back. And he was just so, so, so young when he joined us. He was just a baby, and he had such a baby face as well. And he played with all that sort of joy of, you know, that classic kind of cliche joy of a kid who's just kind of, you know, just running around the playground. But also just like going back over and watching some of the goals that he scored. Like we had some incredible players in that team, but nobody could score some of the goals that he scored. They were just like, the vision and the control and just the sort of sheer breathtaking, like daring, I think. He really, maybe that's it. Maybe he was a real sort of to dare is to do player, the kind that we absolutely love at Tottenham. He's just like, I'm going to score this kind of goal, and I don't care if I'm only 21 and I'm up against, you know, the most kind of fearsome backline or defence or whatever, like I can do it. And he didn't have that fear. And maybe that's also part of the sadness, to see that sort of confidence kind of drain away, because he was such a confidence player, and to see that go and see sort of fear kind of creep in where it just, it didn't really belong. Maybe that's part of it too. But like Billy said, I'll never ever forget some of the times that, like some of the things that I've seen him do, some of the games I've seen him play. And again, even if that team never won a trophy, we were still so blessed to have players like him.
I think the thing for me is as well, there were better players in that Pochettino team, but other than arguably Harry Kane, none of them had the same connection with the fans that Dele had. And I think there could be a couple of reasons for that. One probably was because he was so young, and there's like his attitude that he had, like his arrogance and like his swagger. But I think he was like a good symbol for what we were at the time. And because at the time he was a player that came from League One, he had no right to be as good as he was. And that was like what we were under Pochettino. We had no right to be as good as we were. We kind of came from this like years of sort of mid-table up and comers to be in suddenly one of the best teams in the country. And that's a bit like what happened with Dele Alli. He just came from the League One on MK Dons. I remember his first game, he came on against Man United as a sub. He came on against Man United as a sub and straight away just had that sort of impact. And then his next game, he started against Leicester and he scored. And then he just pretty much every other game then was sort of scoring and assisting. So I think the symbol of the Poch team was Dele Alli because he was a mirror image of it. So that's, I think, and that connection with the fans are why he was such a special player for us.
He did really hit the ground running, didn't he? I was trying to think back and just like, it really didn't take him long to cement a place in that team. What I loved, you mentioned his arrogance and his swagger. I loved that other teams hated him, both the players and fans. Like I had used to have rows with West Ham fans about, you know, they really hated him, and he could wind up opposition players better than potentially any player we've had in recent times anyway. And like that telepathic understanding that he seemed to have with Kane and Son and Eriksen as well. Ash, give us your favourite things about Dele Alli.
I mean, some of my favourite moments, like obviously the flick for Lucas's like goal in Amsterdam stands out because that's probably like the height of the Pochettino era. I think that atmosphere before the Palace game, the first game back at the new stadium where everyone was singing his song, the same before the City game, which was the quarterfinal first leg, was amazing. And then I guess the other goal, and like, it's maybe it's more about Eriksen, but the Chelsea goal in the semi-final at Wembley, like always stuck out, as did the Arsenal goal in the Carling Cup. So that there's so many moments like about Dele and around him. Like he kind of was always at the center of everything. That being said, I don't know. I just feel very disappointed. I don't know if it's him or the club or what's happened, but he should still be at that level. And it's going to be like quite gutting to see him go elsewhere and probably like get back to that level because he's a brilliant player. And yeah, I said earlier today, I don't really know like what went wrong for him. I don't know if he's taken his eye off the ball or whether the hunger's not there. I think he did lose some of the aggression that he previously had. But yeah, I'm just kind of sad that it didn't really work out. And like Billy said, have the ending that it was supposed to. I've been very anti-Dele for like the past sort of 18 months. I thought he should have gone, when Mourinho wanted him gone in January and he could have gone on loan, I think, to PSG. I thought he should have gone then. Not just because like he was out of form, but because I think you just have to back the manager, whoever the manager is. And we didn't. And that was sort of the beginning of the end of Jose. So I'm glad that Conte's been backed, even though it's sort of quite sad for Dele and for us.
It is sad. And even that, the scene in All or Nothing with Jose was pretty sad, really. And Billy, like you said, about him breaking all those stats, breaking all those records when he was young. There was also a chart going around showing that how many minutes he played. He played so many minutes by such a young age. Billy, what, any thoughts on what went wrong?
I do think that maybe played a big part in it, the minutes that he played. I think if you compare it to someone like Phil Foden, Guardiola just does not play Foden anywhere near as much as we did Dele, and that might play a big part in it. But also, I think kind of we changed positionally as a team. Like his role of being behind Harry Kane, which is where he's at his best, kind of didn't really exist anymore. And when Pochettino tried to sort of make him into a midfielder, it just didn't work out. And he's now sort of in that odd position at the moment where he doesn't really know what he is. He's not really a centre mid. He's not really a winger. He's not really... That number 10 role just doesn't exist in our teams, and it hasn't done for a while. And the funny thing is, when Jose first came, he put him back in that number 10 role and he thrived for like his opening five or six games. And then it sort of, again, he just got shifted again for some reason. You would wonder maybe at Everton if he can go back into that role, play with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, he might be pretty decent there. But I also think, I don't think it's going to be a great move for him just because Everton are not that good. They don't have people like Eriksen and Toby that were finding Dele's incredible movement all the time. So I think that he might struggle there. But one of my favourite Twitter accounts is has a Spurs fan tweeted about 2017 today. And I totally agree with that sentiment because we do look back on that time a bit too much. But the last 2 days, all I've been doing is just watching videos of 2017 and 2018, like the Delhi prime, and it's just made me really, really sad. I kind of feel like just putting on some James Blunt and just crying to those highlight videos, but it's really, really sad, to be honest.
Billy, you should know, if you're going to cry, that the podcast dictates that you listen to Adele, not James Blunt, obviously, and have a cry. I'm sure maybe Adele is currently crying. Maybe the Las Vegas postponement was to do with her heartbreak at Delhi leaving the club. Billy, you've got, we had loads of tweets, right, about favourite Delhi moments, and you picked some out. Give us
We've had absolutely loads. So thank you so much for everyone that has written in. And also, fuck you, because it has made me really, really depressed reading them. But I'm going to go for it anyway. So a lot of the moments came up a lot of the times. But THFC Dan has just put a video of that incredible goal against Arsenal, the chip over the keeper, which I do think is honestly one of the best goals we've ever scored, especially in the context of being a cup game against our rivals. A lot of people have mentioned Chelsea. I think he scored 6 goals against Chelsea, if I remember rightly. People put Chelsea brace at White Hart Lane. The Chelsea goals at the Bridge for our first win there in decades. A lot of people have mentioned the 2-0, pointing the 2-0 to Arsenal fans. Thank you to Pratt Hampen, who said all three of those things. Wigan has just put the wave, which I know was iconic at the beginning when he first joined. And I think in a lot of these images and pictures that people put on when he first joined, he looks about 12 years old, which makes it really more endearing, I think. At Own Brand has put the time that he made beans on All or Nothing. And the caption is, "I made beans for the first time today." Sick Public Transit Gloria said his first appearance in pre-season game against Real Madrid, he nutmegged 2 players, one of which was Modric. Never seen such confidence oozing out of a teenager on the pitch. Knew then he might be special. Ali Tweedale says the photo, again, he's put a photo of him holding up 2-0 against Arsenal fans. A rare personality in the game. More players should do that, stuff like this. Again, someone's mentioned, Mr. Beaker's mentioned the dink in the League Cup against Arsenal after the Kane chest pass. And then Liam Neri has said, this was my particular moment as well, the picture of the Chelsea away goal, and you can just see every single Chelsea fan just like irate and like swearing at him. It's just an iconic Tottenham picture. I know some people have actually got it framed in their house as a black and white version, which is what Liam is talking about, that you can buy and get it framed in your house. I strongly recommend that you do that. Bailey Braden has said the Legends game at the new stadium, didn't even watch the game, just stood on the concourse singing "We've got Ali" for 2 hours, never heard anything like it. And I think that's a pretty interesting way to experience your first game at the new stadium, but you know, brilliant stuff. Fran Munler said there are so many underrated choices, assist against semi-final in Ajax. Sean has said the first goal against Leicester wasn't a particularly special goal, but the way he celebrated, you could see the fire. A friend of the show, Chris, says that goal against Palace, the 2 against Chelsea, winding up Woolwich, dancing through the defences on countless occasions, going to miss him a whole lot. We all are, Chris. We all are, that's for sure. And Sock Formation says, obviously, there's this goal against Palace, but I loved his friendship with Eric Dyer. The way they were messing about and joking around, it was peak Poch era, certainly was. Tottenham Simpson says, the day he signed, look at that fresh face. And if you look at his signing photos, he does look about 12 years old. Charlie says about Dyer and grapes. And Steve says, not his best goal by any means, but the one he scored in the last North London derby against Arsenal. And a left field one from Castle to finish, which I literally totally blanked out of my mind, is when he punched Claudio Jakob against West Brom, something which I totally blocked out of my memory. But yeah, there's a good video going around of that as well. So thank you so much. There are just countless moments for a very, very special player.
Oh my God, that the Chelsea home game is one of my favourite games I've ever been at, I think.
Mine too. I think at the beginning, do you remember, like back when we first started the podcast and we all did our like Spurs heaven, that was close for me with that or the 5-3, because you like that game. Like, I just remember it being one of those kind of slightly sort of suffocating games where there was like no space on the pitch for anyone. It was so tightly contested in every area so that you knew that any goal was going to have to be special. And the fact that he scored basically like identical goals within like either side of half time was amazing. But I also I love that our second goal against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge is just incredible. Like, I watched it again this afternoon, and I the sheer sort of like cheek of it in a way, like it didn't bother him coming to a stadium where we hadn't won for 28 years. It was just like, that's fine. I can take that all in my stride, really. And if you look at that, if he scored like, yeah, all of those goals, he scored against teams like Chelsea. Like even like, I don't even think Kane has scored as many against Chelsea. Like Dele just was fearless.
And I don't think it's unique, but I seem to remember that the 2-0 against Chelsea, watching most of that first half and thinking that Dele needed to come off and that it just wasn't working. And he often had those games where he would really, really frustrate you and do very little and then pop up with a moment of magic, right, Ash?
Yeah, sometimes he is a bit of a passenger, but he's capable of like incredible moments. So yeah, I'm just really intrigued to see like how he does at Everton. I think it is going to be tough for him, but like I think Lampard being there, who knows? But Everton are terrible. So yeah, it's gonna be hard, but I hope he does well.
My worry about that is just that like Everton now seem to be sort of what we used to be as a sort of weird retirement home for players who are kind of past their best or who just kind of hadn't quite made it. And it just never really worked out for any of them as much as we wanted it to. But I'd love just, you know, even if he can just get back in the right position, because I just think part of it is so much of the sort of frustrating mystery of like, why has it gone so horribly wrong? And if it is just as simple, I mean, I'm sure it isn't just as simple as that, but if that's a big part of it, just being played in his preferred position, like that'll be fun to see at least.
I think when he left, one of the first things that I did was I looked straight away to see when Everton at home was going to be, because I know that he's going to get an incredible reception. And it's actually on a Monday night at White Hart Lane. I think that's going to be unbelievable. Hopefully it'll be one of those things where we sing the song about him when we're sort of like 4-0 up already. You know, I think he's going to get a really good reception, but hopefully it's sort of after we're already beating Everton.
Yeah, hopefully he gets a great reception and then does very little. Sorry, Dele, but against everyone else, we're hoping you do really well. And Charlie will be devastated he missed this because he loves Dele. And even sort of named his daughter after Dele. So on the next episode, we'll have to get Charlie to at least do a bit, his thoughts on Dele. Before we turn to Brighton in the FA Cup, let's talk about the women's team who were knocked out of the Cup on Sunday to Leicester. I sadly didn't see this one, but I'm going to ask Rosa to give us the lowdown.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. Fortunately, because it was quite sad. And it was one of those, I don't want to turn this into a sort of weekly Instagram rant, but it was one of those maddening things where because of Instagram's weird algorithms, like you get a sort of goal notification like 2 days after it happened. So they were just like, oh, we've scored a goal. And it's like 1-1. And I knew that then that game went into extra time and Spurs then lost to Leicester. I should say, oh, this was in the FA Cup. So because of it being in the FA Cup, I personally don't think it's anything to worry about. I don't really think that team has the squad for another cup run, because on Thursday they're going into the semi-finals of the League Cup, and even though that is away at Man City, that's still like a big night, a big game, and it's a cup game, so anything can happen really. So I don't feel like dwelling on that cup loss. I just think it's one of those things. It doesn't really matter. We've got other fish to fry. They signed a couple of players this transfer window, a defender and a midfielder, including a loan from Arsenal, which is always slightly weird, but and also doesn't feel necessarily like the position that we needed to strengthen, like similar to the men. But at the same time, if we couldn't get a striker, maybe it's sensible to sort of bolster the defence so we don't concede at the last minute as we did against West Ham. So Thursday night, Man City in the League Cup, fingers crossed, basically.
Okay, let's talk more cup games. Let's chat about Saturday. I'm currently kicking myself for being stubborn and not getting a ticket for Brighton in the FA Cup when it was moved to a Saturday night. I was just really pissed off that for no apparent reason it's been moved to a Saturday night. Well, it's going to be on ITV4, I believe. And I just can't believe again that we don't get a 3 p.m. kickoff. I also really wanted to take my 5-year-old. I thought it could be a perfect first men's game. She's seen the women. I believe the club said everyone's fit for Brighton, which is something which hasn't happened in a long time. Son and Romero are back. Ash, what are your thoughts on Brighton and the magic of the cup?
I'm also not going because I just forgot to buy a ticket. But I'm just hoping we go through. I just really want to win the FA Cup. Like, I'm still not over going out in 1995 and crying about it. So, yeah, I just want to get to the final. It's just completely embarrassing how many semi-finals we've lost. I think it's like 8 or 9 and in a row. And yeah, we just have to, we've got to win the FA Cup. And I think we've got like the manager to do it. But yeah, I think having, I'd love to see Romero play because I think for that, like, we've barely seen him. And like one of the new boys. So yeah, I'm excited to see us play again. It's been, this feels like ages since we've actually played a game of football. So I'm looking forward to it.
Billy, what are you thinking about Brighton? I take it you're going. And I mean, Brighton are quite tough opposition right now, right?
Yeah, I am going. I'm really looking forward to it. It's not going to be an easy game by any means. I think Brighton, they draw a lot of games 1-1. I think they've drawn against Chelsea and Liverpool that score recently, if I remember rightly. I know they've definitely drawn against Chelsea recently with that score. It's not going to be an easy game by any means. But I think the fact, for the first time that I can actually remember, since maybe the Champions League final, which was kind of weird because of that 3-week break thing, and we actually have a full squad, which never, ever happens to us. So it'll be interesting. I have a feeling he's going to go pretty strong for against Brighton just because he's a winner. He's won the FA Cup for Chelsea. I think he would love to win it with us. If he does that, he will go down in history. And I'd love to see him win it with us. I really, really would. Before my lifetime, we were an FA Cup team. We were the FA Cup team. And we're just not anymore. We've been, won it once in 1991. And since then, I don't think we've made a final, have we, since then? Which is embarrassing, really, because it used to be our trophy. I would love to win it. I really, really would. I don't think it's an easy game, but really, you know, we can't complain at drawing Brighton at home. We've got to beat him, really. So I think he'll go pretty strong, and I think we'll beat him.
Billy, do you think Romero's coming straight back?
It wouldn't surprise me if he did come straight back, just because this is a game, it's not a Premier League game where it might be I know obviously we all want to win the cup, but it's not one of a game like the Premier League where it might be a risk to seeing what he can do and seeing how he is. So I think it's actually a perfect opportunity to see him back. I know we've got 2 Premier League games in the week after. We've got Southampton and Wolves both at home. So again, we've got that weird thing that keeps happening recently where we've got 3 home games in a week. So I think it'll be a good opportunity to give him maybe 60 minutes and then sort of take him off in the second half. I'd like to see him play, definitely, for sure. It's such a weird thing with Romero. Like, I feel like I haven't ever really seen him play. I think it's just been so long since we've even seen him, and he's such an incredible defender from the looks of things. So I think it's going to be huge for us. And I think it's one of those things. I know Ash said this earlier in our group chat. I just keep forgetting that he even exists. And the fact that he's just come back into our team is going to be a huge boost for us, I think.
Yeah, I'm just, my only concern is the number of games over the next few days. Like, I would also love to win the FA Cup, and I'm also embarrassed by the amount of semi-finals we have failed to win. And I don't want to be like a downer about it, but it just seems to me like we kind of need to go for top 4, really. And we've got 2 quite tough league games coming up. I mean, I think we should go through, but I can't see how much of a priority it's going to be, really.
Yeah, I guess you hope. I don't know, like Billy said, he's got a pedigree in the Cups, Conte. But yeah, like again, like you said, Rosa, we do have 3 games in a week.
And also he won the Cup, but it was the second season he was at Chelsea when they were going to pieces in the league, right?
Yeah, and for me, like, and I don't know what Conte thinks, but for me, like, top 4 is just a priority. We just have to get top 4 because that changes everything. It changes the transfer target.
I agree.
So if he goes for a weaker team, I won't be angry about that personally.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ash, to be honest. I know, like, that might mark me out as like a horrible, like, modern football entitled fan, but I just think top 4 has got to be it.
Right. We'll talk about Brighton on Tuesday, on the next episode. But now on to our favourite part of Hometown Glory, because we never moan in this bit. And I don't think we'll get as emotional as we did during the Dele Alli section. Let's talk about our culture picks. I'd just like to thank Ash for the recommendation of the Music Box Woodstock documentary on Sky and Now. I enjoyed that, and I remembered that Fred Durst is just like totally awful. There was a really good line in that documentary about nu metal, which said that it like took the worst bits of hip hop and the worst bits of metal and put them together. And I think it's probably true. Although I do have a soft spot for Hybrid Theory, the first album by Linkin Park, obviously. Thanks to Rosa for Tick Tick Boom. Andrew Garfield is excellent in that. It's on Netflix. I just wanted to dive into his hair. We've also talked about Girls 5 Ever recently, which I just finished. That's also on Sky, also very funny, and contains a weird crab-related surprise. So apologies if I don't have very good recommendations this week, because I've just been catching up on everyone else's. Anyway, on to this week's culture picks. Let's hear yours, Billy.
Yeah, and I kind of spoke about this last time, not really wrong, because I did foresee it being my cultural pick, but I've just fit in since then, and I think it's only been a week, I've finished all of the first half of the new season of Ozark, and it is so good. They did that really annoying American thing where they kind of bring out the final season, but they split it in half and sort of have two separate final seasons, which is really frustrating. But you kind of worry when you're watching a show like this, are they going to stick the landing for the end, for the final season? And I think only the very best shows manage to do it. And if you look at some of the best shows in history, a lot of them have had sort of dodgy endings, like Game of Thrones famously. But so far, so good. It's been such an incredible half season. The last episode is absolutely insane. And Julia Garner is incredible in it. And I think she's the MVP of the whole series again. She's incredible. But Laura Linney and Jason Bateman are incredible. Yeah, I think it was a really, really strong season. So I recommend anyone who's not into Ozark, it's so good. And if you're kind of like, I see a lot of people compare it to Breaking Bad, and basically it sort of rips half the premise of Breaking Bad, but I think it's really found its own lane. You know, I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan. It's probably my second all-time favorite show behind The Sopranos. So at the beginning, I was like, this is pretty very similar to Breaking Bad, but it's not. It kind of goes into its own self. And I've been so impressed with this half final season. But it's annoying that because of these American executives, TV executives now have to wait a few months until they see the rest, but I can deal with that. So yeah, Ozark season 4.5 has been my culture pick this week.
Thanks, Billy. And to Ash, we never know what he's going to bring. Sometimes it's a coat, sometimes a restaurant. Ash, what have you got for us this week?
I feel under pressure now. I'm going to recommend, I went to see Mustafa the Poet last night at Union Chapel. I'm going to moan about this because we waited outside for 45 minutes in a queue and it was about 3 degrees, which was like highly unenjoyable, but the gig was amazing. Yeah, like incredible voice. The album's called, I think it's called When Smoke Rises, and it's produced by Frank Dukes. I think James Blake's on it, Samford's on it. And yeah, it was just a really special gig. Samford came out. And I just really recommend that album. I think it's one of the best albums that came out last year. And it was just special seeing it in person.
I love Samfer. Is he coming back anytime soon?
I hope so.
I feel like I've been waiting for new music from him for ages.
There's not been an album for years.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Need another one.
Yeah, that whole like splitting the final season up into two parts is so annoying. I remember when Mad Men did it as well, and that was really frustrating. Am I allowed to like confess here that I've never watched The Sopranos or Breaking Bad?
Oh God, Rosie, you're not allowed to say that.
Maybe one is fine, but both. We've never seen either. That is just not acceptable. It's all right if you maybe haven't seen one of them, but both, come on.
I just don't really feel like I haven't seen Breaking Bad. I love The Sopranos. I've watched it like 4 times, but I haven't. I watched maybe the first series of Breaking Bad and gave up. I know that.
I watched like the first 4 episodes of The Sopranos and then just kind of never got back around to it. And Breaking Bad, I was just like, I watched the first episode and I think I was just like, I don't care about you, Walt. I don't care. And but also simultaneously, I was like, I feel like watching the adventures of Jesse was just going to stress me out so much that I thought I'm out of this one. But we did end up, I have watched Better Call Saul. Not, I'm not up to date with that, but I have enjoyed that a lot. I've got a book to recommend this week, which is by the American author Katie Kitamura, and it's not her most recent novel, which was Intimacies, and that was really big on loads of people's reading lists last year. But it's about ex West African president on trial for like crimes against humanity. And I just thought, you know what, I'm just not in the mood for that. But I did want to read something by her. So I went to her previous novel, which is called A Separation, about a wife who is in the middle of a separation from her husband, but gets a call from his mother to say that he's just kind of gone missing. And she has to fly out to this small Greek island to find him. And it's just a sort of slight kind of meditation on the nature of marriage, the nature of partnership, parents and children, and all that kind of like good getting into sort of slightly depressing relationship stuff that I really love. I do have one weird nitpick with it, which is she has this weird sort of stylistic tick of putting a comma where I feel like there should be like a full stop or a semicolon. It's obviously like a very deliberate choice, but after a while it started to drive me mad. But that aside, it's really brilliant and really thoughtful. And now I might actually read the other one, even though it feels like a slightly depressing bridge too far, but perhaps I'll give it a go.
Well, as Charlie has said before, it's always impossible to follow Rosa with the culture picks because she always goes quite deep. But I was just going to mention two songs. I think, well, we've got a month of 2022's music so far. And I think it's, you know, the year started pretty well. Two quick tracks that I'm really enjoying. Fontaine's DC, one of the most, maybe the most exciting guitar group working today. Their new single is called Jackie Down the Line. They're very Irish and very good. And they've got a new album coming soon. There's also a Jimmy Fallon performance of that track that is on YouTube that's just really, really good. Their frontman is incredible. And then Tom York and Johnny Greenwood have a new side project from Radiohead, even though the songs sound fairly like Radiohead. It's Tom, Johnny and Tom Skinner, who's the drummer in Sons of Kemet. I think he plays with Kano as well. And they're called The Smile. Second track. They've got two tracks out and the new one's called The Smoke and it's really, really good. But yeah, seek those two out. Fontaine's DC, Jackie Down the Line and The Smile with The Smoke. Anyway, thanks for listening. It's been emotional. Massive thanks to Rosa, Ash and Billy. Charlie will be back really soon. Don't panic. He will bring back the professionalism to Hometown Glory. We'll have a lot of games to talk about next week. I hope everyone copes with the loss of Delhi really well. For now, I'm going to cross to the man who, let me just reiterate, invented arguably our best chant. And I only realised today, Billy, see us home.
I think it would be only appropriate to see us out in a different way today. So in tribute to Delhi Ali, I think the only thing to do to say goodbye is to wave. So that's what I'm going to do.
Billy's waving.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.